Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:36 p.m. on Wednesday, February 9th. Before we begin, I want to thank Shannon McCain, the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Kelsey Riker from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and all those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Drummond, my Vice Chair Representative Snyder, and myself, Representative Clayman. A quorum is not required because we are not taking any actions today. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 17, Discrimination, Gender Identity, Sexual Orientation, sponsored by Representative Josephson. This is the first hearing of the bill in the House Judiciary Committee, and I would note that this bill is not scheduled for public testimony. We will be taking invited testimony today, but we will not be taking public testimony. Here to present the bill is Representative Josephson and his staff, Max Cohn. Please come forward, identify yourselves for the record, and then you can begin your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Andy Josephson, District 17 in East Anchorage. And this young gentleman, for the record, through the chair, Max Cohn, staff to Representative Josephson. Mr. Chair, I'll be fairly brief, and I'll give the committee a sense of how we got here, and then the PowerPoint will be useful in that regard as well. There are a number of states, quite a few. I'm going to say 25 or so. We'll see in the PowerPoint that protect the interests of sexual orientation and gender identity or expression in their civil rights code. We don't do that. We have localities that do that, namely Anchorage, Juneau, and I'm told Bethel. Fairbanks for a time had it. It was vetoed. I think Homer may have toyed with it. What that leaves us with is, at least in terms of the code or statute, a sort of patchwork where there could be different treatment of folks who identify as same-sex orientation persons or have gender identity or expression that may have changed in their lives for one reason or another, that those groups could receive discriminating treatment and disparate treatment. So discriminating in that they would be denied lending, housing, employment, et cetera, in some communities and not others, and disparate in sort of the same sense that, that if they're in one community or another, it would be they'd be differently treated. There's some subtle differences there. The bill would, and this is very key, and you've received some emails about this, and I want to dispel the committee about any concern, particular concern with those emails, because the bill is anchored in Title 18, the Human Rights Commission Code. So this is about expanding the authority of the Human Rights Commission under 18.80. There's about 30 pages of code there, a very well-developed body of law with case law. They can write regulations, et cetera. And it would add to that their jurisdiction over sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression discrimination claims in the area, again, of lending, employment, housing in particular. Historically, the bill twice got out of its first committee of referral, I think in each of the two previous legislatures. I'm quite sure of that. The bill, I think, becomes more starkly important when you look at the Obergefell decision of, I believe, June of 2015, it's near June of 2015, a decision written by Justice Kennedy, who was a real scholar in this area of the law, not just in civil rights cases, and that's what Obergefell is, but also in criminal law cases in terms of disparate, again, treatment of in the sentencing code or the criminal code of activities or sexual practices, to be very candid about it, of one orientation versus the other, and found that They were discriminatory.
Short pause to recognize Representative Eastman joined us at 1:40. Please proceed.
So Justice Kennedy used the rational basis standard, which is the lowest standard to achieve in the law, and found in the Obergefell decision that there was no rational basis for any state under basic constitutional principles of association, for example, and then probably looking at, I have to review the Obergefell decision again, but looking at, you know, the First and Fourth and Ninth Amendments and sort of collectively looking at what was meant by all of those amendments. And he found that people of the same sex orientation can marry one another. So we're left in a situation where there's an absolute right, for example, this is just one illustration, you could have many, for people of the same sex to be wedded like any other two people, but be denied housing and employment in some states and in Alaska. Now, what's happened is, and there's some irony here, Justice Kennedy was a Reagan appointee. After the death of Justice Scalia, President Trump appointed Justice Gorsuch, and he wrote this decision called Bostock. And Bostock suggests that at least in employment, now this is an important distinction, that in the employment context, one cannot discriminate based on sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, because of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So he read it, again, a Trump appointee, read it very literally and said that part of the Civil Rights Act, so think of Martin Luther King working with President Johnson in 1964 to achieve that victory, that part of the act that referred to a prohibition on discrimination based on sex necessarily meant sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. So just to be clear, and as the historian in me, but it's as if Justice Gorsuch was a much older man and had been on the bench in the 60s, he would have found that way as well, that right was always there, but finally the court identified it. Now, members of the committee might say, oh, well, you've got this decision called Bostock. What impact does that have on the state? I'm happy to report that the Human Rights Commission, more interesting irony I would submit here, under the current administration of the Dunleavy administration, has screened in and considered for discrimination claims persons who believe their right to lending, employment, and housing, et cetera, have suffered discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. So, to be clear, the Human Rights Commission, if a person said, I'm African American and my employer decided that his customers didn't like the fact that I was hired by him, and so he terminated me, that would be a clear human rights case. Similarly, if a landlord said, I'm not going, you know, you seem like a nice young man, but I notice you have a husband and not a wife, I'm not happy with that, and I'm not going to rent to you, that would also be screened in by the Human Rights Commission. So what we're asking to do in this bill is to codify effectively, in part, the decision in Bostock. Now, again, Bostock only concerned employment. Theoretically, Justice Gorsuch would have said, as to housing and lending, he would have to find similarly. There's no clear reason why he wouldn't, based on his pretty expansive and well-considered opinion. But we're asking for our code to catch up both with the common law in Bostock and, in fact, the practice in the Human Rights Commission. That's what this bill does. And I don't want the committee to be distracted by emails that express concern with transgender athletes in high school sports. I don't think, I've just gone through the 30 pages of statute in the Human Rights Commission. I don't think they have jurisdiction over those matters. There's nothing I can see that suggests they do. And to the extent that I'm wrong, and Mr. Corbusier or the Human Rights Commission would say, no, indeed, we would have jurisdiction, that we let the Human Rights Commission sort that matter out. But I think for purposes of this bill, it is a bit of a red herring and not on point. So with that, I would be happy to answer any questions. But the way this would work in practice is the same Human Rights Commission remedies would be available. So to give you an illustration, if you wanted to rent an apartment for $1,000 a month and they declined because they thought you were correctly, or I suppose even incorrectly, that you were a gay or lesbian person or transgender, and you said, all right, I'm going to go rent down the street, but I have to pay $1,500. The delta of $500 could be a penalty imposed on the first landlord who declined to rent to you. That's the kind of remedy they provide. They do not provide
I'm going to take a short interruption to note that Representative Kirker joined us at 3:46. Please proceed.
They do not provide non-economic or punitive damages. They're not allowed by statute to do that. They are allowed to enforce the law. And they do it, by the way, they do it. Part of the way is to stay out of court. And they do that by having conference, conciliation, and persuasion. those words are interesting. But bottom line is, they try to mediate a settlement. And then either side, failing that, well, they can issue an order and people can appeal from that order. So that's where we are. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. And then we'll go to the PowerPoint with your permission.
Actually, we're going to go ahead and if there are questions for Representative Josephson, we can take those questions. Mm-hmm. Representative Eastman.
So now, did I hear you to say a moment ago that whereas Bostock was narrowly confined to employment, that the Human Rights Commission has taken Bostock and used that to expand beyond employment, or is it just limited to employment?
It is, through the chair, I believe it is beyond that.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions if you want to proceed with your next step of your presentation.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Max Cohn, staff to Representative Josephson, and I'm going to build upon what Representative Josephson has said, give a little bit of background on Alaska law and go into a little bit more detail, but I'll get through this pretty quickly. Alaska has a history, even going back further than the National Congress, in protecting people from discrimination. Everyone here is fully aware, I'm sure, that in 1945, the territorial legislature passed the Anti-Discrimination Act 20 years before the National Congress's Civil Rights Act. That law has developed, and today, as Rep. Josephson described, we have a state commission on human rights that is charged with screening cases that deal with discrimination, and the current characteristics and factors that they consider under the law are race, religion, color, national ancestry, physical or mental disability, age, sex, marital status, changes in marital status, pregnancy, or parenthood. And in general, as Rep. Josephson has said, they deal with cases in, broadly speaking, employment, housing, and loans financing. Now that has historically left the LGBT community who the evidence empirically shows face tremendous discrimination without remedy. And these numbers speak for themselves. I think there is a lot of evidence we've provided in the documents for HB 17, other sources. This is one of them, that shows surveys of LGBTQ people dealing with discrimination in housing, employment, financing, things that this bill would help with. And again, looking around the country, we see the same. This is not something that doesn't happen in Alaska. It happens across the United States. So what does the State Commission on Human Rights look like right now? This is pretty much what Rep. Josephson went into, so I'm going to go through it. But because of the Bostock ruling, and I'm going to read a quote, if that's all right with the chair, from Justice Neil Gorsuch in his opinion, and it's really at the crux of his argument of why sexual orientation and gender identity are automatically or are inclusive within the word sex, which is in the Civil Rights Act of 1964. He said, "Today we must decide whether an employer can fire someone simply for being homosexual or transgender. The answer is clear. An employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex. Sex plays a necessary and undisguisable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids." And applying his logic and his argument, the State Commission on Human Rights has done the exact same thing that he argued, that if someone is fired, if they're discriminated against in their housing, if they're not given a loan because of their sexuality, then that is ultimately based on their sex. And that's, the law forbids that already. So HB 17 really is codifying the current practice and law of what exists in Alaska today. So let's just look around the state and the country to see what these laws look like elsewhere. Rep. Josephson mentioned that Anchorage, Juneau, Sitka, and Bethel already have ordinances even before the Bostock decision that protected these classes. And around the country, the vast majority of states have the same. I find these color distinctions to be a little bit unclear, but what is clear is that there are only 12 states in the country that do not protect and that do not explicitly in their law protect discrimination in employment. And because there might be some confusion that there is the National Civil Rights Act, anyone is still protected. And they have the ability to go to the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, at the federal level to remedy their discrimination. The problem is that is a huge burden on people because the federal commission is extra federal bureaucracy, and it's Alaska's belief, it's been the legislature's belief in the past, that this is something the state should also be involved in, and making it easier for people and not making this a federal issue. A really important note on discrimination is that it's preventing it, eliminating it, fighting against it, and giving people protection from it is also good for business. A study showed that 96% of the top Fortune 500 companies, the math is probably clear on this that I can't do off the top of my head. It was very few of these companies don't already have in their own charters and rules, rules that protect people for their sexual orientation, and the number was 70% for their gender identity. This is something companies do not because they are necessarily acting out of their moral conscience, but because it's good for their business. They know that protecting people and showing them that they are deserve protection is good for business, and that's another reason it is good for Alaska. Here we have the sectional, and I think I can go through this really quickly. If people have questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But what HB 17 does is go through the State Commission on Human Rights statutes, and it inserts the phrase sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression into the list that currently includes the list I read before. And it does that at every instance that list appears. So this deals with the general policy of the State Commission on Human Rights. It deals with the three main areas that Rep. Josephson has already said, which are public accommodations, finance, lending, and employment. And it adds that phrase into those statutes. And I'd be happy to go through these in more detail if that's preferred, but it's really adding that phrase.
I should just go at the pace you're going, and then if there are questions, we'll come back.
Perfect. That sounds good. And I will note that public accommodations are defined in statute. It's a long quote. I won't read it, but It includes businesses, places that exist in the public sphere. That's kind of a general rule. And the phrase sexual orientation and gender identity expression is also defined in the statute. So that I anticipate people might have questions about that, but it's here on the slide for you to read as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I know we have one person for invited testimony, so why don't we take the invited testimony and then we'll open it up for questions from the committee. We have one person on. Sure.
Just that, understandably, there's going to be questions about the rights, for example, of a faith-based organization to not, for example, offer employment to people of same-sex orientation or transgender persons, et cetera. The Supreme Court in Fulton versus Philadelphia just last summer heard a case that related to this, and I think is pertinent, and it found that, in fact, I think even the so-called liberals on the court agreed. So this is virtually a unanimous decision, although there were some concurring decisions. It found that Catholic Social Services in Philadelphia did not have to accommodate, for lack of a better word, gay couples in their foster care system. So they could make the statement, it was protected for them, to say, we're only going to operate a foster care system as delegated by the city of Philadelphia to opposite sex-oriented individuals. Interestingly, they did allow for single same-sex-oriented people, but not couples. The point, the reason this is relevant is that in the Bostock decision, there were no claims of free exercise of religion. So people shouldn't misunderstand, and they should be disabused based on a more conservative court, today's more conservative court, that there will be carve-outs for the exercise, free exercise of religion. Thank you.
So we have one person here for invited testimony, Rosa O'Hara-Jolly. Ms. O'Hara-Jolly, if you want to identify yourself for the record, state any affiliation you may have, and you can proceed with your invited testimony. We'll limit your testimony to 3 minutes today. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair Clayman and members of the House Judiciary Committee. Are you able to hear me?
That's fine.
Thank you. My name is Serene Rose O'Hara-Jolly, they, them pronouns. I live in Fairbanks on Tanana Dene lands, and I am here to testify today as state director on behalf of Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates Alaska. Planned Parenthood strongly supports HB 17, a bill that updates Alaska's non-discrimination statutes to promote dignity and fairness for our LGBTQ communities. Each of us should be free to create families, build loving relationships, and be who we are without facing discrimination based on our personal, private lives. The freedom to pursue our lives without government interference or interference by neighbors or employers is a core value in Alaska. Yet every day, Alaskans across the state live in fear of being fired, denied housing, turned away from public services, and rejected from financial opportunities because of our gender identity, expression, and sexual orientation. It doesn't have to be this way. When it comes to earning a living, having a place to live, or being served by a business, LGBTQ people should be treated just like everyone else and should not be subjected to discrimination. Our state already prohibits discrimination based on race, religion, color, age, disability, and marital status, just to name a few. However, these crucial protections do not explicitly extend to LGBTQ people. As a healthcare provider and an employer, Planned Parenthood knows that this legislation is good for public health and good for business. Because of discrimination and fear of discrimination, many LGBTQ employees hide their identities at work, are paid less, and experience fewer employment opportunities than their non-LGBTQ peers. For example, 44% of LGBTQ residents in Anchorage, reported that they have been harassed because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, and 16% reported that they were forced to leave their jobs due to harassment. Additionally, 21% reported that they had been turned down for a job, 18% reported that they had been denied a promotion, and 15% reported that they had been fired because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. When transgender people are surveyed separately, they report similar or even higher levels of discrimination. This prejudice puts LGBTQ people at increased risk of poor physical and mental health. We know that economic insecurity and discrimination begets health issues.
You're at about the 3-minute mark. If you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Okay. I'd also like to say that I am queer, and simply stating this here as a Fairbanks resident means that I could be fired from my job, evicted from my home, or denied basic services like heating, fuel, and water delivery. Equality and ensuring each person in Alaska has the right to basic human dignity is everyone's concern, and it is time that our state catches up. The legislature may choose to not support this bill, and that's unfortunate. But I am not going anywhere. They cannot erase me, and I will continue to show up and make sure our LGBTQ communities know that we are here, and we always have been here. Thank you for your leadership on this issue, and we hope you pass HB 17 out of committee.
Thank you very much. We don't have anyone else for invited testimony, so now we'll start taking questions. You can either ask questions, and I think Representative Kirky, you may have had your hand up a little earlier, and I didn't. We weren't taking questions yet, so you're up first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As usual, we're on our one-minute time limit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Josephson. There at the end, you made a comment regarding the religious liberty free exercise provisions in the Constitution, and you said something about carve-outs. And I'm a little confused, and I hope you can answer this. I don't see anything even resembling a carve-out in the bill. And that case you referenced was a case of Philadelphia, not Alaska, not with our Supreme Court here. And I'm wondering if you can address that.
Sure. Through the chair, the carve-out would exist by operation of law. So all of those books behind you are Alaska cases. Unless they've been overridden by later cases, they're all in effect right now. That's what, in fact, there's more over there. That's what...
some in the back of the room, too.
Yeah, that's what we mean when we say operation of law. Because what's at issue here, what was at issue in Fulton v. Philadelphia, were federal issues, it would be applicable to the five justices we just saw in the gallery today. So, they're not interpreting Alaska law, and therefore we think of the Supreme Court, our Supreme Court is the last, the top of the pyramid. Well, there's a further pyramid, and they'd be subject to it. So this applies in Alaska. Yes.
Follow up?
I guess I could see that if it were, to the chair, Representative Josephson, if we were under the Ninth Circuit, and there was a Ninth Circuit opinion, but this is Philadelphia, not part of the Ninth Circuit. And it just seems to me like we're taking chances, and if you're saying the words carve out, I think of that as specific language in statute, and we haven't seen that.
Just if I might, through the chair, this is, if I was concerned with religious liberty, I would like this a lot more than the Ninth Circuit, because this is the highest court. And there was virtual unanimity. There are concurring opinions. This is the Chief Justice writing this opinion. Justices Gorsuch, who wrote the Bostock decision, and Alito concur. That means they agree with the holding. They may have a different way of getting there. So this is absolutely binding in Alaska, and it's better for religious liberty than a Ninth Circuit decision.
And for the record,
follow up, Representative Kirker, is that all?
I have follow up questions, but slightly different topic.
Did you have, Mr. Cohn, did you have some follow up in response to the prior question?
Yes, if I may.
Sure.
Just an additional note to say that there has at least been one case to our knowledge in Alaska that the judge ruled a homeless shelter on the Kenai Peninsula, which was run by a religious organization, was denied a man his ability to stay there because he had a service dog, and he filed a petition to the state commission on human rights. The court case found that the homeless shelter, because it was operated by a religious institution, was not included as a public accommodation, and he was not his case was denied, even though he was applying as under the discrimination part of the anti-discrimination law.
Okay.
I would just note, and Paul, I would largely agree with what Rep. Josephson said, that the fact that the Supreme Court case came out of Philadelphia doesn't really matter, because that precedent is binding on the Ninth Circuit, because it's a lower court with respect to the U.S. Supreme Court. Next question, Representative Kirk. I know you want to go into a different topic, which is
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I may have – I apologize if I missed that. I thought you were talking about a circuit decision in Philadelphia. I might have been distracted reading something. I didn't realize it was the Supreme Court. So next question would be through the chair, Representative Josephson. I see here we're talking about sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression. And how would you answer the concern about, say, in a public accommodation, a school or a school sport, and that school choosing to, I guess, be traditional and have women go to women's restrooms and men go to men's restrooms? And how would you deal with the concern of males who are identifying as women going into female restrooms or engaging in female sports?
Through the chair, I know that that's a sensitive and hot-button issue, but what I would say is that it's not... it's not clear to me that the Human Rights Commission would have jurisdiction over that kind of dispute. And we could ask Mr. Corbusier, who is the director of the Human Rights Commission, whether I'm incorrect. But, as I said, the bill is about adding those terms to existing Human Rights Commission law on employment, housing, and lending principally. And, So I just don't think that this bill touches on that question.
Representative Kirk, a further follow-up.
So if I understand, Representative, through the chair, but Representative Josephson, you're suggesting that the entire non-discrimination law itself doesn't apply to public accommodations except for the ones you just referenced. If that's my, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. I think that's what I'm getting from you.
Through the chair, I'm saying that if issues, the issue of transgender athletes, for example, starts with, I think, confusion to some degree for sure, but also consternation by some folks about the role of a transgender athlete in that circumstance. And if we were to try to take that same transgender person here and put them in the employment context or the housing context or the lending context, they could not be discriminated against. But I don't read Title 1880 to answer, frankly, questions about transgender athletes per se or students. And, I think that Mr. Corbusier would be the better guide to answer that question.
Well, he is not with us today, so we can certainly inquire that at a future hearing, but he's not with us today. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My questions are for our invited testimony.
Ms. O'Hara, Jolie, are you? Yes, there she is. Okay. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you. Now you mentioned the possibility of your being fired, and I'm curious through the chair. So if you were to be fired under those circumstances, are you aware that you could file a complaint with the Human Rights Commission to address that?
Well, through the chair, my understanding of federal employment law is that it applies to businesses with 15 employees or more. And I would be happy for someone who is more confirmed and a lawyer with that. But that is my understanding. And so by having it in state statute, it would allow for things to be clearer for all businesses and employers in the state to know that regardless of your level of employment, of how many employees you have, that we do not discriminate, but would also allow me, like the bill sponsor stated, to have a state recourse instead of needing to go through the federal government and see if I apply for that.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And is that the sponsor's understanding that you wouldn't be able to go to the Human Rights Commission, or they wouldn't consider that type of complaint if someone was fired under those circumstances?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'm glad you asked this question. And I asked Mr. Cohn to put the slide up. And the reason I asked him to put up the slide is you see the states in gray. They're Rocky Mountain states, essentially South Dakota and the Deep South, or parts of in West Virginia. They aren't, they're putting on blinders when it comes to Bostock. Now, whether you could go to court and insist that they don't, I don't know. But I think you might have some headway. Whether you're going to get those states to actually pass a law to comply with Bostock so that someone doesn't have to go to federal court, I don't know. That's another lift. But I think that Ms. O'Hara-Jolly's comment is well taken in that the Dunleavy administration quietly, which is fine, made a policy decision that Bostock was going to apply. And so it moved us into a blue color from the gray color. And we could move back. We could have someone who sees this issue differently than the Dunleavy administration and doesn't believe, for example, or might read Bostock more narrowly and say, well, that's an employment case. So think of this, the way I was thinking about this morning when I was preparing is think of this like Brown versus Board, 1954. That was about public school desegregation. It wasn't about water fountains. But the whole system of Jim Crow imploded, took decades for it to happen, but it imploded after Brown versus Board. But it doesn't have to implode. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, I don't know. I appreciate what the Dunleavy administration's done. I don't know, without it being codified, that it'll stick. That's my answer.
Follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. So, you know, another thing that was brought up during the invited testimony was differences in pay. Could someone in Alaska who felt that they were being given an inadequate, you know, salary or compensation because of this, could they file that complaint with the Human Rights Commission, and would the Human Rights Commission be able to hear that today?
Through the chair, yes, but they would have to show substantial evidence of it. That's the standard. So, each case would be unique, and if a talented gay or lesbian employee with great annual reviews, who, you know, was the best business agent in the company, et cetera, you see where I'm going, was overlooked constantly, it sounds like they may be able to put on substantial evidence.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
And so would your bill before us today, would that change that in any way?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, yes, because it would be codified. So folks that are protected by this bill could go to sleep at night and know that it's moved from case law, which again just covers employment, to our code. Now, you know, what I've learned about democracy is you have to be vigilant constantly, because we've seen, laws in the code come out of the code. So there's no relaxing in democracy. You have to watch these things and monitor them.
Follow up with a different line of questioning.
That's fine. Go ahead, Representative.
Oh, thank you. And I do want to give other people an opportunity if there's a desire.
I think you're the only one in the queue right now. I have a question when you're done, but it can wait.
Thank you. So I'm looking towards Section 11, where we define gender identity or expression. And it means having or being perceived as having or expressing in gender, self-image, appearance, or behavior, and so forth. And that does seem somewhat broad. If I'm looking at someone who's expressing just a self-image or expressing just an appearance or expressing a behavior, which is maybe a little bit harder to nail down what that is, how do we limit the scope of this so that it does apply in some way to gender as opposed to simply expression? Because it seems like the definition of gender expression here doesn't necessarily require gender in the definition. Because if we're just talking about a self-image or an appearance or a behavior, how do we tie that back to gender?
You got that just under the limit, Representative Eastman.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I think that, for example, self-image relates to gender in line 9. So it is the topic is gender identity or expression, and if one has a self-image as being a female or male, then that may be a protected self-image. And but again, we're talking about substantial evidence. So it would not do, I think, for an applicant to say, well, on Wednesday I felt like a woman, and didn't you recognize that? You clearly didn't, and you put me on probation, or you terminated me, or you didn't give me the pay raise. That would not meet the substantial evidence test.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman?
Thank you. So are you trying to, with this definition, exclude gender fluid individuals?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I'm not.
Follow up.
Representative Eastman.
And I'm just trying to understand your section a moment ago. So is this individual on Wednesday, who intended to have a certain appearance or behavior or self-image, regardless, doesn't matter which of the ones we're talking about, and felt discriminated against for that fact, are they less protected because of that fluidity, or are they equally protected, or what's your intent?
Through the chair, I'm not sure I understand the question, but I guess my point is that the substantial evidence standard would seem to require that it be bona fide and legitimate and sort of a persistent self-image and one worthy of respect and one for which even Justice Gorsuch found that that would be a protected class of persons under the Civil Rights Act, under the definition of sex, that to discriminate against someone based on sexual expression would be protected under his reading and majority's reading of sex. But again, this decision concerns employment. It changed the behavior of our administration in terms of requiring the screening in of these cases. But that is changeable. It's a policy call. And what I'm saying is it should continue more permanently so that we don't revert to being a southern state or a Rocky Mountain state on this issue.
Thank you.
So go ahead and recognize that Representative Chris Tompkins joined us at, looks like, 2:20. Representative Kirka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, in relation to my earlier question, we see on page 2, lines 23, in reference to public accommodations, again on page 3, line 2, we're talking about public accommodations. We're saying the civil right. Then again on page 4, we're talking about it being unlawful for an owner, leasee, manager, agent, or employee. So this is page 4, section 6, starting in lines 14, of a public accommodation. So I guess it's pretty clear that this would, in fact, apply to the public restrooms at, say, a high school or a middle school. And I guess I'm trying to understand how this wouldn't affect that, and basically somebody who identified, who was a biological male, who identified as a woman, walking into a restroom with little girls or young women, would not, in fact, be the product of this bill.
Through the chair, Representative Kirka, I mean, I don't think a student would be an employee of a public accommodation at a school. And that's first. But I think that to really bring the best mind to this, I believe the committee might want to hear from Mr. Corbusier and see whether, you know, what his analysis of that would be.
Okay, so the question I had is, in your analysis of the Bostock case, which arose as an employment case, but the Civil Rights Act covers more than employment, is your analysis of the Bostock case that the reason that it only addressed an employment case is because that was the case before the court, and then their tendency to narrowly construe their decisions, they only addressed an employment case if they had, say, a companion case raising the same statute, the same Civil Rights Act, and that was a housing case combined with an employment case? Is it your analysis that if that had been the case before the court, they would have reached the same conclusion both as to employment and to housing?
To the chair, yes. And it's because I can't see any daylight in Justice Gorsuch's thinking. And he's adamant about his position. And he's done a very effective job, I think, in coming to it.
Thank you. Any other representation? Okay.
Thank you, through the chair. Now, if I'm gathering correctly, that you're not intending with this bill to make changes to law dealing with women's sports, for example. Would you support an amendment that made that clear, that we're not talking about athletes, that public accommodations would not implicate athletes in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, I don't think I would support that amendment because I think it's a distraction. Now, I say that with respect. I understand that, you know, a few weeks ago there was a dispute about a Penn State, where I went to law school, swimmer, who destroyed records that, and there was, that is, created new records in the sport of swimming. And there was dispute about that person's status and whether they were eligible, et cetera. I think that it is not helpful to this bill. And I don't know what more I can say. I don't know what more I can say.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. And I'm curious, since it hasn't come up yet, how does your bill square with Article 1, Section 25 of the Constitution?
Through the chair, remind me what that says, Representative.
Yes, through the chair, that's the marriage reference in our state constitution.
Oh, through the chair, I have no concerns about that. That is, one can find in some versions of the United States Constitution, probably in Article 1, because that's the powers of Congress, reference to the Three-Fifths Clause, which treated slaves as three-fifths of a person. So That's essentially what that is. It has no, it's a historical footnote from 1998. It was the most recent reflection of the will of the Alaska people. That's true. They didn't want same-sex oriented people in 1998 to marry. But it has no effect. It has no force in effect.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Since you don't expect to have to be bound by that portion of the Constitution, is that unique? Is that the only part of the Constitution that you feel that way about?
Through the chair.
Representative Eastman, you know, I know it's an interesting topic, but I think that's really not germane to this bill. That section of the Alaska Constitution has been ruled unconstitutional by a federal court, and no one has contested that decision, and that's the law of our state today. And I don't think the question of Representative Joseph, I think we've got this bill that I think it's a reasonable question you just asked as to Section 25. But I think going on to the rest of the Constitution is a little bit, I just don't see the relevance as it respects to this. If you want to discuss that with Representative Josephson offline, you're more than welcome to, but I don't think we need to spend the committee time on that.
I'd like to ask about dress codes and uniforms, if I might.
We can ask about dress codes and uniforms. I think it has potentially relevance to this bill in front of us.
Through the chair, so with passage of this bill, since we're now protecting self-image, appearance, and behavior, I guess, each of which might touch on an employer's dress code or a school dress code or a uniform that employer requires employees to wear, do you expect that that will be the case, or what is your intent, that this protection would impact dress codes?
In a short pause before he answers, to recognize that Representative Vance joined us about 3 minutes ago. Please proceed.
Through the chair, Representative Eason, my understanding is that an employer could still require dress codes that were reasonable and appropriate for the employment at issue. They could still require uniforms if that was reasonable and appropriate. It's not an area of great expertise for me. What they could not do, though, is say, I believe, Bill, that you're a man and not a woman, and therefore you will dress like a man. That would be a problem under I think, this bill. And under Bostock.
Now, follow up.
Representative Eastman.
And so in the situation where maybe like the U.S. military has historically had only two types of uniforms as far as gender goes. If a employer in Alaska were to require an employee to choose one or the other of only two options, would that violate the rights that we're protecting here in your bill?
Through the chair, I don't think so.
Thank you.
All right, I don't see any other questions.
I have one.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and through the chair. I'm curious to know, when these protections go into law, if the bill passes, is it your intent to prevent, voluntary segregation? For example, if REI wants to offer a particular class to the public, but it designates that class is specifically for transgender individuals, would that be a violation of the protections here?
Through the chair. So you're saying if the Recreation Equipment Incorporated store in Midtown Anchorage was inclined to offer a class for transgender persons, which they never would do. So you're giving me a very bizarre hypothetical. Would that violate the bill?
My question is, does an employer, REI or any other employer, with passage of this bill, have the option of specifically tailoring a class or a product to individuals of a particular gender or gender identity or expression if It's trying to create maybe a more inclusive environment and trying to create a safe space. Can it do that under your bill, or would that be, you know, illegal segregation?
Through the chair, I wouldn't use the term illegal segregation. I couldn't see it. It sounds like a form of harassment to me. I can't see how it would be linkable or relatable to the employment. So I think that they shouldn't do that.
Thank you.
All right. At this time, we'll hold the bill for further review. We will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, February 11th at 1:30 p.m. We will stand adjourned. The time is now 2:31 p.m.